Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Greg Blaze, host of Cutting the Curd. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Motherfucking treat, we're back. Can you dig it?
Woo!
All right, happy Halloween, everybody. Now it's happening. It's all happening here. Streaming live from Bushwick Arts. This is Seizures. We're back with another all-star show. And back in the co-host seat is the talented and intrepid Rosie Schapp. Good to see you.
Good to see you and to hear every teenager's favorite Bach.
All right. It's great. It's great. Peter's Rumba is out in Oslo scaring little children. Yes. No doubt. You know that in recorded American history, there's never been a case of a razor blade being found in an apple.
I did know that.
I knew that too.
I'm trying to change that tomorrow.
Yes.
All right. Joining Rosie and I, we have Steve Blush, author of the incredibly epic, literally epic. I mean, this thing is a monster. This is possibly the heaviest book ever written. And if you don't agree, you just don't know your math. New York Rock, from the rise of the Velvet Underground to the fall of CBGB. I was there for the last half of that. Stephen Blush.
All right.
And it doesn't stop there. It's an embarrassment of riches. You're going to have to recite
I'm embarrassed.
Are you?
I'm embarrassed.
Well, if I played in all the bands you played in, I would be too.
Yes, yes.
As I said earlier, you've played in more bands than Ronnie Wood combined.
Ronnie Wood combined. I don't think you can combine Ronnie Wood. At this point in his life, you can't combine.
But Dean, you in this book, starting at the time of you were about voting age, you've probably played in like 90% of the bands.
No, it starts before that.
No, it does. But I'm saying since you've been a voting age, and that coincided with this book of 18, you have played in a metal scene, in a rock and roll scene. You're currently in The Dictators, who yes. I'm very proud of, by the way. I can't believe how much work you guys are doing continuously.
Yes, I may strangle them soon, but it's going
against all odds. And when I say all odds, I mean a disgruntled bass player.
Always. Always.
All right, I love Halloween. And Rosie, we're also celebrating. You have a new column out in the New York Times magazine today.
Oh, that's
right.
I heard of that.
Yeah.
Still gainfully employed by the Jewish press. Mazel tov.
Thank you so much. You know I love Halloween, too. Halloween drinks, Halloween music. I'm making a Halloween dinner party tomorrow.
Oh, really? Do tell.
Well, it's terrifying. I'm going to cook a theremin, which is what I want to do right now. No, I always make goulash on Halloween. Get it?
Goulash!
It's true.
You are the ghoul of my dreams.
Oh, you're too good.
Oh, by the way, you'll be very proud. Last night I went to a Halloween party and I wore my gorilla suit.
Ah, well, you were the gorilla of my dreams.
Thank you. That's why I thought of that. And I did meet someone on the train, and they were like, yeah, that gorilla suit's the best. You could never go wrong with it. And I said, well, me and my friend Mike Edison always said, the mark of a true gentleman is having a gorilla suit in your wardrobe.
That's true. You should, if I had a car, I'd keep it in the trunk of the car just in case I showed up at a party.
Exactly.
And needed it. Were you a scary ape or a funny ape? Were you an ape?
I was Harambe. Huh. I was Harambe. So I got, on the streets.
So you were like a dead ape.
I was with Lucy. Lucy was Santa Muerte. So she was escorting me through purgatory. And during that time, teenagers would run up to me on the street and be like, dicks out for Harambe. So that's really
all right. Well, somehow you've managed to combine rock and roll, monkeys, and the literary genre.
I'm sorry, that's apes, not monkeys.
That's
thank
right.
You.
Apes.
Thank you.
The difference is one of them has a tail.
Yes.
I was thinking how one of the fun things about Halloween is a sort of mixing of myths. It's like mixing metaphors, but in costume.
I'm still trying to get over that there really were no razor blades and apples. I haven't really gotten beyond that one.
Come
I thought for sure that was still going on.
Come to my house tomorrow, Steve. Oh, man. Well, let's talk about Steve's book, New York Rock, and this really is an epic tale, and it's incredible, you know, to read a book that I'd be like witness to the rise and fall of an empire.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, you know, I was definitely in, you know, on the playing field for a lot of this and the bleachers for some. Should be mentioned, this follows, though, you're also an incredible an American hardcore which you're very well known for, which is an incredible amount of work. How the hell do you put? How long does it take to put this together? This is from the Velvet Underground to the fall of CBGB.
Yeah, well, I'll put it this way: I have a 5-year-old daughter now, so and I started it before then. So do
that,
the math. Yeah.
That makes me feel so good about my very, very late manuscript I'm working on. Thank you,
yes.
Steve.
It does work like that way. You have to be. Yeah, it's how many times can I rewrite it and annoy editors and.
These things don't write themselves, unfortunately.
Oh, this thing writes itself. Yeah, as if. No, it's like having homework every day, I tell people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Books, but this is, you know what this gives you? This gives you gravitas, my friend. This is heavy.
I wanted to give you a high five, but I'd get involved with the theremin.
This is real history. I got to tell you, so I'm reading the book. And it's broken up logically, chronologically, of course, but also along the lines of what one would have to call scenes. For instance, the proto-alt garage revival. The garage revival, you remember that, Dean? People wearing Beetle boots and Little Lord Fauntleroy suits and playing Sonics covers.
You were part of that.
No, not really.
Yeah, you kind of were.
That's why I don't trust scenes, okay?
Yeah. You kind of were.
I kind of was.
Yeah, you were part of that.
Because didn't I see the raunch hands at the dive?
Yeah, not with me, though. Yeah. But there's an example. The raunch hands, who were definitely a long-running New York band that I'm very proud to have been part of, definitely at the beginning was... Well, the first time was like it was called cowpunk because everything was very twangy and like you know sort of based on like really hyped up twangy Duane Eddy riffs, kind of punkified and boozified. It really started with Michael Chandler playing at Club 57 doing X-rated truck driver songs. It was like a comedy act. That was actually the true untold roots of the raunch hands. It was him and Michael Chang. It was a 2-man group, Chang and Chandler, and they played X-rated truck driving songs, like the most misogynist, filthy shit you ever heard. That's where Spit It on the Floor came from, and a couple other things that became raunch hands standards. And Mike Maracana joined the group, and it expanded. But by the time I had joined, that sort of twangabilly cowpunk thing had gone the way for something much more aggressive, and we were much more into Ray Charles and James Brown and kind of steamrolling that. Mm-hmm. But once you're in a scene, you're in the scene.
Yeah.
And I find that very limiting. You know, I found that...
Well, yeah, because, I mean... Yeah, I mean, I know when I wrote this book, you kind of have to categorize people a little bit. You can't just,
of course,
throw it all out there. And there are some similarities, and we do, I'm sure there are disagreements on, you know, was I a, you know, you can break down the minor categories.
Oh, yeah, we're going to talk about
So there's a lot of that, you know, it's like kind of like, you know, you're talking about the raunch hands, which I really liked, and, you know, the record, I remember the first one on Relativity,
sure,
right?
Sure, Do the Wabba-Dang, which was, the raunch hands were the next big thing.
Yeah, for sure. So, but it's like...
That lasted about 5 minutes.
Hey, you guys toured with Susie and the Banshees?
That was right before I joined the band, but yeah, it was definitely like a thing, so Susie and the Banshees, and then when it sort of... fell apart in New York, we found out we had a large following in Europe, which is when I joined the band. I probably did well over 100 gigs with the raunch hands in Europe, and it was more punk rock. That's where things meet. You know, when we started out, if you liked the Ramones, you definitely didn't like Hank Williams or Frank Sinatra.
Right.
Now, everyone I know loves Johnny Cash, and and it's much more open, but at the time, things were so regimented that the hardcore scene...
Yeah.
Now, and if you like the Dead Kennedys or the Bad Brains or Minor Threat, you definitely didn't like Little Richard and Elvis Presley.
Correct.
Even though you were listening to the Misfits, you know, which was basically an homage to Elvis.
Yeah. But I fell into those traps as a young kid. That was really stupid. It was really stupid. Like, I sold records, but I was like, I'm not into this anymore. And now I'm buying those records back for three times the amount of money. You know, like, it's, like, ridiculous.
Sure. I gotta say, I'm surprised to hear that, Dean, because you were one of the most ecumenical music fans I know. I mean, you're a big fan of prog rock and country rock and blues. Yeah. You're very knowledgeable. And, Duke Ellington once said, there are only two kinds of music, good and bad.
Yeah, and I actually like a lot of the bad stuff, too. I do. I can't deny, New York radio, not this kind of radio that... That's the free radio in your car is the worst. I mean, like, it's the worst ever. I only listen to I have four choices in the radio that I switch to. It's Q104, this classic rock, and that half the time it's absolutely unlistenable.
Oh, my God.
And then I switch to 101, you know, CBS, 101.1, which used to be the best station, and now it's sort of like
because
his 90s is oldies.
Well, because the 80s, when they sneaked that up, the 80s became, you know.
But the 80s, I don't even mind the 80s stuff. It's that I can't stand anything from 1990 to 2001.
Thank you.
Like, to me, that's the worst era of music ever created in the history.
Also, there hasn't been a good painting made in America since 1951. I'm just saying,
that's something.
You know, and when's the last honest politician that ran for office? Broad statements, but hard to very broad statements indeed.
Well, that being said, as a kid, you know, when I'm 15, 16, 17 years old, getting into hardcore, and all of a sudden it's like, fuck punk rock. I'm only into hardcore. You know, it was like you compartmentalized.
Oh, man.
That's where you got. And then for a while I was like, fuck this. I'm only listening to skinhead music. And fuck that. I'm only listening. Then all of a sudden I was like, only listening to different things. I'm like, wait a second. All this stuff is the same. It's the same stuff. Like, it's all the same stuff.
And very much my experience.
It was pretty dumb.
When I was out on the road with Reagan Youth, people used to like laugh at me for listening to Elvis and Little Richard, and on. And like I said, they listened to the Misfits, and some of them liked the Cramps, but they didn't like rockabilly. It's like, Rosie, you ever meet a Grateful Dead fan who tells you, I don't like the blues or I'm not into country music?
Yeah.
Sure. No, and that was something I found frustrating in my two years spent or misspent on Grateful Dead tour. Of course I wanted to listen to other things, but many people didn't. But I think when we're young, identity formation is such an urgent matter for some of us.
Identity formation is the crux of this.
And so that happens. It's like, well, I love this, so I can't love this. And I think we outgrow that.
Yes.
Can we talk about the Grateful Dead for a minute?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah,
sure.
That's like a real bane of my existence.
Very, very un-New York.
Yeah. No, I mean, I really tried at all different phases of my life. I even saw I saw one of their classic concerts at Englishtown Raceway when I was a kid.
Sunday.
Raceway Park. I loved the subversion. I loved the DIY side. But the culture of it, there was just something really lacking, and that just drove me to punk rock.
The part where someone could take a nap on stage and fans would applaud.
To nap too, so it kind of worked for everybody.
All right.
I won't get too deep into it.
No, but it's fine. No, it's fine.
I was DJing a party last night, and I even threw on some Grateful Dead. I threw on Althea, you know.
Well, I do
cool.
find it interesting. People. Oh, I like Althea.
Like the worst song ever.
No, there are far worse. But I find it so interesting.
I played that China Cat Sunflower.
People who never would have listened to the Dead 20 years ago and mocked me, they've now embraced the Dead. At least some songs.
Listen, I want to love the Grateful Dead.
I mean, they toured solo. They had their own sound systems.
Yeah.
There was no warm-up. They weren't part of the system.
Yeah.
Even these last shows, if you wanted to go see them, you sent, your money to a post office box in Oakland.
After the fans complained because the Ticketmaster thing was a scam, and all the tickets went to third-party vendors,
the fans
complained and said it's not very Grateful Dead. So, in all fairness...
Well, there you go.
It was an evil cash grab.
But there's always something weird that comes back with them, too. You know, it's kind of like...
I'm a huge Jerry Garcia fan.
Yeah, me too. I think he was a great musician.
And he was an unbelievably good singer. One of the most underrated singers. He could make me cry with his ballads. And great Bob Dylan interpreter, by the way.
And they were great friends, of course.
Why aren't more people dressing like Bob Dylan, the current Nobel laureate for literature, as Halloween? I mean, the dude looks like an Undertaker. This seems like the perfect topical Halloween costume. Wide brim.
Good idea.
River Gambler, Undertaker hat. I mean, why not?
I've been noticing these rehash Highway 61 revisited T-shirts. I've been catching a lot of them in the past week or two.
Oh, there's nothing like winning a Nobel Prize to make you hip.
Yeah. Yeah, that's super hip. Yeah.
So, okay, let's talk about the Grateful Dead though. Does beg the question, Steve? Where are the hippies in this book?
Mm.
Well, I do actually go into it a little bit. I kind of start this story of the rise of the Velvet Underground, right? And there's the hippie thing before it, which is probably best represented by the Fugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I talk about that, but I really see it as a precedent. I see it as something that led to the rock, because there's really, as much as Fugs were intense and the Ginsberg thing, it really doesn't resonate today. I mean, the attitude resonates, and that's the precedent. But
they're a little hard to listen to.
Right. I was going to say, the answer is Sonic Youth.
Yeah.
Sonic Youth.
Hippies. You don't think so? I mean, sort of the Grateful Dead of the noise generation.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And to me, and a lot of people raise their eyebrows about this, to me personally, musically, television was the Grateful Dead.
Absolutely. Yeah. Huge Jerry Garcia influence in that guitar player.
Yeah, huge. I mean, side two of Marquee Moon, I mean, it definitely goes into
all those looping
Grateful
solos.
Dead, and I love it. I love those.
Well, here's a common misunderstanding too. I think everyone in this room gets it, but at large, CBGB's being the home to all this music. But what do the Ramones, Blondie, and Television Talking Heads really have in common with each other? I mean, Blondie's a pop band, at its heart. The Ramones obviously were ground zero for their own thing, but also an art experiment in their own. Four guys who dress alike and have the same names playing highly conceptualized songs.
Yeah, it's like,
and Television, which is sort of post-Velvet hippie art.
Right.
Well, I remember that in the hardcore days. It was, the Butthole Surfers were hardcore. Everybody was hardcore. It was just because if you had it in you to be there.
Right.
That's what it's about. And that's what was going on at CBGB's. It wasn't the sound. It was like the attitude. It was like an umbrella of these intense characters of all these different sounds, right? So it's never about the sound in a lot of ways. It's really about who's congregating.
Yes.
And that's one thing I try to get involved in with this book, too. It's that New York rock, the interesting thing about New York rock is that it's the people who are living below 14th Street all mingling, and whether they were artists or poets or sculptors or filmmakers. I mean, I was just told I didn't know what art was when I moved to New York, and then finally I kind of showed up in this, around when there was this East Village gallery explosion, and it made perfect sense to me because it was like rock and roll.
Totally.
And the rock and roll was all part of this, and that's what we were a part of downtown. We were living this thing that was like, it's never really been seen before and probably won't be seen again.
I always felt that we were outside looking in, no matter how popular our bands got, within our own scene. Q104 wasn't about to add it to the playlist.
Yep.
No, but nowadays you turn on Q104 and they do play the Ramones.
The Ramones. Oh my God! I mean, someone said to me, "This is I'm thinking about just my list of great things people have said to me. This goes way back to the '90s." And someone said to me, a younger person who was trying to mentor a little bit said, "Well, just name defensively name one punk rock band that's still active and playing." And I said, "Well, the Ramones." And I said, "The Ramones aren't punk rock. They're like a mainstream classic rock band." But not understanding that when I went to high school, you got beaten up for liking the Ramones and the Sex Pistols.
Come on. I remember, "Yo, faggot. Hey, Devo."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that was a big one.
Yeah.
"Hey, Devo." I mean, that's because that's all they do. Because they,
The poor girl across the street from me had purple hair. She's such a sweet girl. And because she dyed her hair purple, she was just another punk rocker, art student, looking for whatever anybody was looking for when he was 17. The girls thought she was a dyke and the guys thought she was a slut.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what?
No winning for losing.
They were all right.
All right, we're gonna take a short break. How you feeling today, Dean?
I feel awful. I feel awful. I'm pretty hungover. I haven't been drinking that much, and I've honestly been trying to take the weekend warrior approach. Just drink on the weekends. Don't drink during the week. I've been going to the gym, feeling better. Because sickness and death surround me at all times. I have to fight it a little bit. So I on the weekends, even Friday, I didn't even drink that much. But last night,
you know what's really good for a hangover?
I was wearing the gorilla suit and drinking. I was burning hot. Yeah. I'm drinking through this gorilla suit. Everyone's like, "That's so funny." And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm on my 9,000th beer." And it's like, I feel terrible. But the Edison hangover treatment is the best. I didn't have time this morning.
You had a beer in the shower this morning?
I didn't.
Nothing else works as good as beer in the shower. When are you going to dedicate, Rosie, when are you going to dedicate a column to drinking beer in the shower?
I have to say, I've never drank a beer.
Yeah,
well, then you haven't lived, my friend.
I'm not sure that's a winning pitch for the column.
For the New York Times?
Well, maybe for anyone.
No. Don't knock it till you try it.
Not even the food. Not even the food section.
And it's not even or the hygiene section, such as it is. You know, it's not just a hangover cure. It's an important science.
Science!
Of course, I've had to write about hangovers now and then, and we all know the filthy truth. There really is no cure.
Yeah, just keep drinking.
Sex, sleep, and more booze.
An emergency room doctor who I sat next to at a bar one night, he said basically...
you woke up to one night in the emergency room?
Stuff, the Pedialyte. The stuff they give dehydrated babies.
Yes.
Pedialyte and sleep.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I just want to promote the beer and shower as a lifestyle element, not only as the RX for hangovers, but also, I mean, I love in the summer when I have a three beer in the shower a day. It's like the first one I'm on vacation, so I'm just sort of getting up and getting it started. I may or may not be hungover, but it's nice because it's hot and I'm summering in Italy, so I can get away with this sort of thing. But then after the morning, you come back, you have lunch, and you want to change because you're kind of gross, so you have another beer, take a shower, it's another beer opportunity.
Yes.
Actually, and then my favorite, though, even like on a normal day, is as civilized people do, I like to change for dinner.
Yes,
not in the Downton Abbey way, sort of way. I'm not living some costume drama, but I've worked and I'm going to go out to dinner or have a date and I want to take a shower and change and revitalize. That's my favorite beer in the shower right there, because when I get to the restaurant, that shouldn't be the first drink I've had all day.
Is there another date after the beer in the shower? That's what I wanted.
Well, there's another one when you come home. When you come home, you can have more beer in the shower.
What I do find appealing about this is that some people say beer is good for the hair. So while you're drinking, you mix a little into your shampoo.
Yeah.
You can justify anything.
Remember,
an IPA, though. I don't think that's good for the hair.
What was that stuff? Shampoo on tap? Remember that stuff?
Oh, it's all coming back to me.
Beer was in the shampoo.
Right.
All right, I hope that Bloody Mary is sorting out. Let's get back to Steve's book, though, for a second, because before we run out of time, it being the fastest 30 minutes on the internet and all that, I want to talk about the fall of CBGBs. And I like that there's a non-sentimental view in your book. I really like that because...
Because I haven't read the book yet, and that exactly...
Well, I don't want to ruin the ending for it, but CBGBs isn't there anymore.
Everyone dies. Everyone dies.
It's the King Lear ending.
Everyone dies.
There's now...
This guy's good.
But you can go to the place where CBGBs once stood and buy a very, very... I'm going to use my Joe Franklin voice. Very, 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 very expensive sweater.
Very expensive.
I went in there and they gave me something. I don't even want to wear it. It's not even like comfortable clothes. It's like a knockoff of this. I don't know, man. It's like, I was so proud. I walked out of Varvardos once with these free clothes and I was like a fool. I don't even wear them.
You felt kind of dirty after that, right?
I did.
You needed to take a shower with a beer after that.
Yes.
I estimate conservatively that in the first decade of this millennium, 2010, I drank 75 cases of beer in the shower. You can do the math. It adds up. That's barely based on like a 3.5 beer a week estimate. It adds up quickly. CBGBs.
Okay.
Okay. And the bathrooms at CBGBs, which were so lovingly recreated at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Yes. when I was working on this book, I used one of those pictures that I have in there of the bathroom, and all of a sudden the art director decided to like use it like 5 times. And I said, over my dead body, are you putting this book out with like a bunch of toilet pictures? It's like, we get the idea.
Certainly a historic toilet, but still.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't really... Thank you.
As toilets go. There are some great photos in this book. It's not photo heavy, but there's some great stuff. I love the picture of the Lismore Lounge, just the outside, to remind me of all the good sleazy nights we had there.
Yep.
A good Gigi Allen gig, a successful Gigi Allen gig got involved.
It actually ended.
We actually played the set.
We played the set.
It was incredible.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, no, so anyway, I think we all know what was happening at the end of CBGB's. It was just kind of a slow, painful decline.
Yes, it was awful.
And it really was awful, right?
It was awful.
It
went from a place that in the 80s and 90s, the first thing I would look at is who's playing. And I would go there at least once a week, maybe twice a week, at least.
It's a great room, great
sound.
And then
the last 10 years that it was open... There was maybe one good show every 4 months, and it was like almost like a sympathy gig. Like someone would be like, "Yeah, we might as well play CBs,"
or someone who really went out and looked to play. play there and made an effort because they weren't booking out-of-town bands. They weren't making an effort to book local bands. You know, all the bands that were playing at Coney Island High could have played at CBGB's
when they did this,
as well. Mm-hmm. Because people love CBGB's. Mm-hmm. Great room, great sound on stage. Musicians loved it because the sound on stage. The giant side fill. It's like the single greatest monitor in the history of New York rock and roll.
That's an amazing sound system. You know, as a non-musician, I went there and I was I'd done this record and I was announcing bands up there and I just, as a non-musician, I felt the power.
Yeah,
you know, I was like, wow, like it was not just the production I'm talking about, but like the whole thing. But it was like what you're describing. What I thought was really telling about the fall of CBGBs was when they did the shows, like the last month of shows. There was no local bands. Mm-hmm. It was all like touring bands from LA and London who loved the idea of CBGBs.
Wanted to get in under the wire. There's a story that's hinted at in your book, but not fully explained, that Patti Smith was kind of acting like a diva in one of those shows, and Ellie said, "Let's close it down right fucking now." You want to tell the story?
Yeah, that is actually the story. The last night of CBGBs, Patti Smith was playing. Patti Smith told Hilly, "You can't record it," or something like that, and was laying down all these rules. He goes, "You know what? I'm done. Out of here. Get out." You know, he threatened to throw them all out. And Patti came up like about 5 minutes later and apologized and let him do everything. But he full-on was over it. I mean, yes, we know he was dying. You know, we know all this other stuff. But just culturally, it was over. Like, Dean describing it pretty well. And there's also this, like, one thing that I really sticks in my mind is, like, how the club would be empty, tourists would be peeking in there, and then going next door to buy the T-shirts.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
It was a large licensing and T-shirt business at the end. Yeah. You can now visit CBGB's in Newark Airport, I understand.
Yeah, you can.
We'll be appearing there anytime. Yeah. I can only imagine. But I don't think he wanted to keep the club going at any time. Yeah. And this whole Save CBGB's thing, I thought it was so sad because the people who wanted to save CBGB's hadn't been there in a long time. You know, we talked about this a lot on the show. Nostalgia for things that we haven't even, you know, oh my God, the Mars Bars is closing, CBGB's is closing, New York is changing. When's the last time you were there? You know, when's the last time you made an effort? It wasn't, you know, and the guys that own CBGB's didn't want to save CBGB's is a sad thing. So,
yeah, that's true.
So it wasn't, you know, like they were being euthanized. I mean, it was kind of like more of like a merciful death with dignity is what I was looking for. I love also in your book, we're talking about Steve Blush's book, New York Rock, some of the comments about New York changing from Dick Manitoba. Iggy Pop's got a great comment in your book. It's like, it is changing, and it's changed for all of us. But New York's always been changing.
Yes.
Okay, it's been changing since, you know, it was New Amsterdam. Mm-hmm. That is the nature of the island.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's getting a little whiter, and it's getting a little bit more too many chain stores and IHOPs and what have you. Mm. But that's the nature of the island. And to ignore that is really clinging onto some, you know, sort of phantasm.
I think what I've learned from writing this book is that every generation has that.
Yes.
Like everybody, and one thing I say in the intro, which is very interesting, is like what I learned was like every scene, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it was all like, who's the sellout? Who's like the traditionalist? Who's you know, the most pure? Like, who's, you know, so it's like these same discussions go on and on and on. So everybody thinks their stuff is profound.
And pure.
Right. Yeah, right.
And uncompromised.
Right, right.
So where's it happening now? That's what I want to know.
You know what? I love the term now.
Well, it's impossible.
Post-rock. I love that term post-rock because it really is. At first I hated it, but then I realized it's perfect because if you know your art movements, there's like, you know, impressionism, then post-impressionism, mm-hmm. where they're basically doing impressionism, but it's just the context is totally different. And that's kind of what rock is now. It's like you still have four people on stage and you still have the interaction and you have all the trappings of a rock show, but you can't tell me that the same culture exists that was there 25 years ago.
I'm astounded when I just scroll through my Facebook feed and I see so many bands who look exactly alike. It's remarkable. It's one person standing with a bass player and guitar player on the other side. I mean, it is a time-proven formula. You know, that is what guitar bands are about. But man, it's like, and it just looks exactly the same. And there's no wonder why the popularity for this sort of like local kind of rock is dwindling because it's been going on for so long. I don't know. I don't have the answer. I don't know what's new.
I think what always happens, I mean, again, coming back to that art thing, just in a more general term, it's there's these periods where there's this incredible action and so much happens, and then there's like a century where everybody's catching up to it.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like we're kind of at that right now.
Yeah.
Because,
you know, because there's been so many ideas were thrown, like, you know, talking about this book. I mean, new wave, no wave, post-punk, rock, punk, sklam, you know,
neo-glam.
Yeah. Well, I'm coming up with words.
I know, but we shared a rehearsal space with these guys. I thought they were a heavy metal band until they corrected me and said, we are not heavy metal. We are brutal death. Sorry. Yeah. No joke. They're very, very earnest. Okay, it has been, as always, the fastest 30 minutes on the internet today. Arts and Seizures today was episode 199. Wow. Can you dig it? We're coming up to the 200th episode, and everyone's invited. We're going to have a party. Stay tuned. The party's going to be after, if we survive the upcoming election, I will announce the details. All right. Rosie's got a new column in the New York Times today.
I do.
What's your column about
Drink
today?
Up. It's about Halloween appropriate drinks with blood in their names.
Nice. So what are we drinking today?
Well, I'm drinking a Bloody Mary, but I wanted to offer alternatives to that, so I highly recommend a Blood and Sand for your Halloween
blood
drinking.
Sand. Blood and Sand. That's like a bullfight.
Can we have one afterwards?
Probably. We probably can.
Okay.
They've got scotch, and they've probably got cherry liqueur and lime juice. And
is it good, though? That sounds kind of nasty.
No, it's good. Let
me tell you something.
It just looks red.
I can vouch
for, it's a great drink.
I can vouch for the witchy wonders of Rosie Schaff, the Stevie Nicks of brown liquor.
Nicest thing anyone ever said to me. Thank you so much.
I somehow doubt that, but thank you so much for coming in
pleasure.
And joining us again. The great Dean Rispler. Who's again been in more bands than anyone I know?
continuing that tradition.
Have you been played in Q104 yet?
Not for a while. I mean, an old band was on Jonathan Davis. Jonathan Davis, is that his
which
name?
Band with that?
Jonathan Clark.
Jonathan Clark. Thank you. Jonathan Clark played my old band many years ago.
Which old band was that?
Tiger Mountain.
Tiger Mountain.
Yeah, it was poppy.
I remember Tiger Mountain.
Yeah, it was a poppy.
But you can go see Dean with the Dictators on New Year's Eve.
I'm playing Dictators December 30th at Bowery Electric. Ooh. I'm playing December 3rd with Cosmo Demonic at St. Vitus. And I'm playing December 1st I'm filling in on bass with the Star Spangles at Berlin.
Ooh. Our old friends.
Yeah.
Busy man.
Yeah, trying to be.
We should get those youngsters.
Yeah, I mean, can I just step in? I mean, Dean's really done so much great stuff around here, you know, kind of like quietly and respectfully, like done like really good work. And that's kind of what this book is about in many ways, like kind of giving respect to the people who aren't just like totally like, it's not all about your publicist, you know, or like whatever this stuff is, or however you get yourself known. I mean, it's really about the people who are in the trenches. I mean, look, you know, the great artists are the ones who just do the art and don't talk about it. You know, and that's a hard thing to be.
Yeah.
And but you know, this is kind of in tribute to that. You know, because I'm all about the work. I'm all about like, you know, doing the work.
Well, I think this is a great book. New York Rock, from the rise of the Velvet Underground to the fall of CBGB, Steve Blush.
I think he did the work.
Everyone should do the work.
Everyone should do the work. No shortcuts, kids.
That's right.
No.
Everyone's
got to go on tour.
Yep.
You got to get out there. Get in the van.
No matter what. If you're doing a book, get on tour.
Get
in the van is right.
Yeah, you got to get in the van, metaphorically, existentially, and otherwise. It's been Arts and Seizures. Come on, next week it's going to be the 200th episode. I promise you more mayhem. Once again, Rosie Schaff, the Whistler, the great Steve Lush. Please buy his book. It's fantastic. It's very important to have books about scenes such as this. There are a lot of people in this book who otherwise may have not ever been mentioned again, which is sad. I mean, they're always going to talk about Sonic Youth. Maybe. But, you know, I'm flattered that I mentioned the book, and everyone that I know is in this book, and it's really important.
Thank you. When I worked on this, there was every reason not to put everybody's name in it. There's, like, I mean, when I'm talking to an editor, there's no reason that I should be writing about any of this. You know, they'd be very happy if I just wrote 20 more pages on the Ramones.
Of course.
You know, really. You know what I'm saying? And I got down to a paragraph. I just want you to know that.
The Ramones book has been written. You know, the Velvet Underground book has been written. The New York Dolls book, you know, has been written. But all these wonderful bands of the 80s were such a good time.
Amazing.
In New York City, in the 80s, sort of get slagged for being bad music. And certainly, you know, Reagan-era new wave dance hits were probably the nadir of the entire fucking art form. But meanwhile, CBGBs was happening. Lismar Lounge was happening. And a lot of great bands in New York and, you know, out of Austin, out of Minneapolis, you know, out of California were definitely happening. Just not reaching the the stratosphere of Q104 classic rock. All right, we'll see you next week in Arts and Seizures. We're going out with one of our local favorites, Do Willies. This is the New York Stomp. See ya.
Woo!
I get sick when I walk in New York City. ravishes riding in the street.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.